And I'm in love with this good life.
Coming in hot, Chichi. What's going on, brother? Looking forward to this one, man.
I'm definitely looking forward to this one. You said I was going to fanboy out, but I'm a grown-up man. I've been in this industry for almost 25 years.
Yeah.
But I'm fanboying out just like a little bit. Just
this is good. Hey, man, one of my favorite people of all time. You know, probably doesn't need any introduction, but I'm going to introduce him anyhow. Five-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, two-time home run leader, AL MVP, and also Clemente Award winner this year. So, and by the way, one of the best dudes you'll ever meet. Let's bring him in. My buddy, our friend, Aaron Judge. What's up, Judgy?
What's up, fellas? How we doing today, man? Thanks for having me on today.
Dude, thanks for coming on, brother. So how's everything going, dude? Are you're down in Tampa right now? Guys kind of getting ready to go. I saw you and Volpe and Glaber, a couple other guys, playing a little home run derby the other day at camp. Tell us how everything's going down there, brother.
Oh, so far, so good. You know, this is the exciting time of the year where it's not official yet. Guys are coming into town so we can work out, we can hit, we can kind of BS, you know, have a little bit of fun and, you know, kind of do our thing before we, you know, go to work to, you know, bring a championship home to New York. So this is, it's a lot of fun. Guys are jacked up. Guys are pumped up to be down here. And it's going to be a great spring and a great season.
Nice, man. How's my man Riz doing? How's Riz feeling? Is he feeling good? Is he locked in?
Oh, he's locked in. He looks great. You know, I saw him. We communicated all throughout the off season, and you know, he was working on his swing, working on different things, man. Because he had a tough go last year with that head injury. You know, that's something you don't play around with that. You know, and he fought, and you know him. He's a guy that he's not taking any days off. He's like, I want to be in the lineup every single day. I want to play 162 plus, like. You know, you're not taking me out of this lineup, even though he probably couldn't see straight, wasn't feeling good, nothing. He was like, I got to be there for my teammates, you know, and my boys. So,
yeah,
you know, he's a fighter. He's a leader. He's one of the leaders on this team. So seeing him come into camp now and he's feeling great. He looks great. Swing looks great. You know, I'm excited for him. But he did get on me a little bit. You know, I was, you know, last year he started taking some reps in right field. You know, when I was down a little bit, he started taking reps in right field. So this year in spring, I was like, I got a little first baseman glove out of the back. I said, let me take some reps at first base. So I put some ground balls with them yesterday and, you know, had a little bit of fun with them. So
what did he say when he was taking fly balls and right? Was he like, hey, this is easy?
That's what he said. He's like, you get the two seeds. You get to talk with the fans. You know, you just play around out here. Like, while the infielders have the real dirty work, you know, you just get out there and have fun. I said, just wait till you get Yordan Alvarez. You 110 mile an hour line drive. Let's see how you
act. That's so great.
Aaron, you mentioned Riz, and obviously Sean knows Riz pretty well. Like, I know you guys knew Sean was the mayor before he came in, but did you guys have any concept of the energy that this dude brings every single day that he goes to any job or anything he does?
You know, what's funny is, you know, during the season, Rizzo and I were out at dinner at Lou Cali's in Brooklyn, a good little pizza spot. And we're kind of sitting in the back. It's just us with our wives. And, you know, I was kind of talking with Rizzo, hey, I think we're, you know, I don't know if you know this yet, but we're going to hire Sean Casey as our hitting coach. And the look on his face, the excitement, like it looked like he was a little 10-year-old with how happy and excited he was. Like, are you kidding me? Like, gets on his phone real quick, dials up Casey. Casey answers on the second dial. You know, it was just amazing, you know, and Rizzo's the whole rest of the dinner, I was just telling us stories about, you know, the type of person Sean is and, you know, how he goes about his business, how he is day to day. And, you know, I was excited. And then, you know, sure enough, once I got to meet him and, you know, play for him, you know, throughout the year and just really get to see what type of person he, because I've been a fan of his, you know, as a player, you know, you watch him on TV for years growing up, everything like that. But then I get a chance to pick his brain about hitting and he, you know, Casey, you pick my brain about hitting all the time. Like, you'd catch me, like, walking in between, you know, going from the dugout to the cage. But, hey, you know, so when you're in your hip, you're doing this and that. And I love that. I love talking hitting. So, you know, just to see that passion you had for the game, you know, you still have it for the game. Like it's, you know, that spread out to, I feel like everybody in that clubhouse, everybody in the organization, man, and we always appreciate it, man. And then I won't get into the stories, but we had some good stories for us that he shared that, you know, they were amazing.
We had some great stories. Judgey, I appreciated about you too. I saw a lot of myself in you, just like me when I was a player, always seeking, always looking for things, you know, to get better. And that's one thing, dude, I loved about you. Like one of the things I loved was your attention to detail. Your routine was right on every day. When you didn't feel right, you know, you were always, I could tell, you know, I was watching, bro. I could see you by yourself. Like you might have just gone to the bathroom. I looked down and you're getting a load going. You're getting your hands right. You know, you're always kind of tinkering, which I love. So can you talk a little bit about that, Judgey? Like how have you evolved as a hitter since you come into the big leagues and also your routine? How has that become so important for you?
Yeah, I think routine's the number one thing, having a great routine. You know, I think that was the biggest thing I picked up from, if I go back to 2016, just getting called up, you know, A-Rod had just left, you know, but I got a chance to see A-Rod in spring training, Carlos Beltran, Mark Teixeira, Brett Gardner, a lot of these hitters that have been around the game, been around the league, had a lot of great seasons, MVP, stuff like that. But the one thing I noticed about them was I could look up at the clock, and I knew at 5 o'clock, Mark Teixeira was doing this. I knew at 5:30, he was going to be in the gym. I knew at 6 o'clock, he was getting stripped. They just had the routines down. And me as a rookie coming in, man, I was eating at this time every, I'd hit it. It was always just random. It was always random. And then going to the game, you know, you almost would feel like a little like, you know, well, did I really stretch out enough? Or did I, you know, get all the swings I needed? You know, and then when I kind of look back and reflect on the season, you know, I was like, well, all these big leaguers that have been around for 13, 14, 15, you know, 20 plus years, you know, they had it every single day. Like they knew exactly what they're doing so they could go into the game and just focus on playing the game, you know. So that's the one thing that for me, I think helped evolve and help, you know, take me to the next level was just having a routine throughout the day, having a routine in the cage, you know, just the little checkpoints. You know, I like to keep it simple. Don't go too crazy with it. You know, the simpler I can have it, like I got three keys. I want to get in my hips. You know, I want to feel my direction going to right field, and I want to get a good pitch to hit. You know, I want to be on – my biggest thing is be ready at release. So when he's about to release the ball, you know, I want to be in a good position to hit. Just so that way my move's out of the way, my load's out of the way. Now I just focus on seeing the pitch, and if it's a strike, you know, take a hack. So, you know, that was one of the things I think that helped me evolve over the years was just – I got so lucky to be around so many great players with the Yankees early on and just pick their brain and just kind of see like, well, why do you do this? And, you know, they always were so willing to give me, you know, help and give me answers, give me advice. And I know a lot of other places is probably not like that, but that's why playing with the Yankees is so great is you just have so many great superstars that are willing to, you know, kind of continue to pass on that knowledge.
Who do you think helped you the most early on?
You know, a couple guys. If I go back to when I was in the minor leagues and in my first year in 16, I'd have to say, you know, A-Rod. You know, he was, you know, A-Rod and Carlos Beltran. You know, those are two guys that, you know, I go back to. We're out on field two at the minor league, at the spring training complex, and we're supposed to be doing outfield relays, communication, all this. And I was out in right field with Carlos Beltran. You know, future all, I'm like, I gotta pick his brain. I know.
You're like, yeah, okay, baby. Going, yeah,
exactly. I'm like, we're supposed to be, you know, doing some outfield communication, but I'm like, you know, hey, you know, Carlos, your rookie year, you know, you started off so hot, this and that, and then kind of, you know, your second half didn't go well, but then you end up the year, you're still hitting, you know, 290, you know, 30 plus homers, all this and that, and then your next year, like how did you go into your next year? Like, I just was asking him all these questions, and he just, you know, the coaches are looking at us like trying to hit us. You know, hey, you're gonna throw this in, and he's kind of waving them off, and he's just talking to me about his process and how he views the season and how he never really dives into the numbers too much. He was like, your numbers are going to be your numbers. You know, you're the player that you are. Like, even if I start off hitting 330, you know, I feel like I can't get out. Well, you're going to go through a period where you're going to have a little slump, and then you're going to get out of it. And then when you look up at the end of the year, you're going to be hitting 290 again, this and this. And he's like, yeah, my second year in the big leagues, didn't start off great. was slumping, this and that. I get hot in July, August, September. I look up, my numbers are 290 again, this and that. He kind of just was telling me, like, you know, don't get caught up in the roller coaster ride of the season. You know, you're going to have the lows, you're going to have the highs. It's just going to be constant. If you're riding that roller coaster, your emotions, you're going to be riding that, and your teammates aren't going to be around you. Like, oh, you know, Judgy's 0 for 10 right now. Stay out of his way. Or, oh, look at the guy now. He's 5 for 5. He's the best player on the
top of the world. Yeah.
So he just really broke it down to me about just, you know, go out there, show up, compete. You know, you are who you are. If you just show up, you prepare the right way, you know, your numbers are going to show up at the end of the year. Don't ever try to look at your numbers or try to match numbers, and you know, just go out there and play. So it was, you know, Beltran, A-Rod. You know, A-Rod, I would just fall into the cage. I would just sit there and watch. And I would just pick up so many things from how he viewed it, you know, the drills he would do, the machine work he would do. And, you know, I still use a lot of that stuff, you know, to this day.
Dude, I want to talk about that for a second, because I'll tell you what, you know, your batting practice was incredible. And I want to go to a couple points here, because at your first few rounds of the batting practice, I'm coming out to watch Aaron Judge play. Aaron Judge hit. I'm like, this is really boring. I'm like, I want to see Aaron Judge hitting balls 540 in the left center gap. Meanwhile, you're hitting balls to right, and it's very meticulous. It's very easy. You could tell you're working on stuff. You're not trying to get too big. And then towards what I love, dude, you know, and I felt like I was part of the, you know, part of your routine at times. Those last couple rounds, you'd always turn to me and I'd give you a situation, you know, and you would ask for a situation. And I could tell mentally, man, this guy, you know, you had such a purpose for batting practice, and you wanted game-like situations. But you said something to me in Kansas City that I'll never forget. And you were doing your normal first couple rounds, and you always hit the ball to right field. It almost feel like you're trying to one hop the fence right to right field. And I asked you, man, Judge, why do you do that? And you said something that A-Rod had told you about that. Can you get into that a little bit? Because I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah. So same thing. You know, I'd watch every spring training. You know, I would try to hurry up and okay, Alex is hitting on field one. I got to get out there and just watch his BP. You know, even if I'm just shagging, I'm watching it. And I would see him a lot of the time, the same thing. I'm expecting to hit him over the scoreboard, right, hit him opposite field onto the, you know, the highway. And he would just consistently, like, over the second baseman's head. And then almost, like, just line drive, like, almost through the fence. Like, he was hitting it so hard and so clean to right field. Like, he was almost trying to hit it through the fence. Not over it, not these
right high,
you know, towering fly balls, just almost just hard line drive, center field, hard line drive. You know, he'd have one or two rounds where he'd kind of give the fans a little something, but then he'd be right back to drilling to right. I remember asking him, like, hey, like, why, you know, what's your routine? Why do you do that? And he said, if I'm in the game and I'm focused on hitting line drives, if I'm focused on hitting line drives, then I go to the game, and all of a sudden the adrenaline pumps up, the speed gets a little bitter. That's when, you know, maybe I'll get underneath it a little bit and clip it, and that line drive turns into a home run. But if all BP, I'm just focused on trying to hit home runs and my bad angles underneath the ball, well, then when I'm getting 97, I'm still underneath the ball. That's those fly balls turn into foul balls or swing and misses. So you just talked to me about, you just want to, it's about barrel accuracy. How accurate can I be with this barrel? You know, stay through the baseball, hit a line drive. You know, if you miss a little, if a line drive, you miss it a little down, you know, you still got a chance. It might sneak through the infield, do something. You miss it a little underneath, you know, that's a home run. So, you know, he just really talked to me about, you know, you don't need to search for home runs. Like, those will come. You got the power. It's just about being accurate, being consistent. And, you know, I still take that to this day. Like, that's why my BP might be a little boring. It's like, for me, I try to hit it over the second baseman's head. I try to, like, one hop it to the right center wall, like our bullpen. And if I can do that, if I know I'm feeling a good position right there, then in the game, when the crowd's getting into a big situation, this and that, I always know I got that in my back pocket. Like, hey, just nice, easy swing to right field. You get a little pumped up, or I get a little underneath it, it's going to be a homer. But it's not me just taking these big wild hacks and really not knowing, you know, what I'm trying to do with the play.
Dude, I find that to be incredible, man, because – you know, for any kid that's going to listen to this, you know, it's so easy. I think the easiest thing to do is to get into batting practice and just launch towering poolside fly balls, because, you know, that's easy. But if you're working like you're working, and like A-Rod was saying, working, and some of the best players that I've played with kind of work that same way, you're right, man. When you get in the game, all of a sudden, you know, Judge, you'll hit one, you know, you'll hit one 480 left center. Like, we didn't see one of those swings of BP. It's like, no, because that BP practice creates that left, even a left center home run at 480. I just thought that was fascinating, dude. I love that was your thought process.
Yeah, because also with that, like, for me, when I'm trying to think right center and just kind of keep it low, like, I feel like I get into the zone early. Like, my bat gets into the zone early. I stay through the pitch. So then if a pitch comes in or they hang a breaking ball, I'm still taking that same swing to right field, get in the zone early. And that's when my lower half just kind of, you know, you just keep turning, and you pull the ball to left field. So for me, it just made it simple. I didn't have to think about having eight different swings. Like, hey, I got to have this swing for when the pitch is in. I got to have this swing when the ball's up, this swing when the ball's down. No, I got the same swing every single time. It's away, if it's in, if it's middle. It's just about how my lower half is going to continue to take me through that baseball. And I feel like you kind of did the same thing. Your whole career, I watched, you would wear out. He would wear out left field. Like, you just consistently, you know, if they made a mistake in or hung something down and in, like, right, I'd see you leave to right. But
yeah. Well, you know, you have that, you know what I mean? I think, like, mastering, letting the ball travel and getting that backspin into left center or right center for you. Like, if I get that, I always felt like the pitcher was in trouble. Cause now what are you going to do? Yeah. You know what I mean? And if you miss in off the plate, I'm probably taking it. And I can just react to something that's on the plate. So, you know, I always thought that was, like, you know, the best thought process too. Judgy, what about your setup, dude? It's very, I wouldn't say it's unique, but it's like, yeah, I think it's your own, man. Like, you get an early load on your backside. You do such a great job of loading early, and you're such a visual hitter. And then you're able to get to, you know, your foot down and then go. When did you start doing that? And why do you start a little earlier than most people do? No, you sit better. Is that what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, you know, because I, you know, work with the hitting coach I use, Rich. He really talks to me about my back leg, your back hip. You know, if you have all that weight, all that power into that back leg and back hip, that's when you can really sit there and balance and watch, see the baseball. I think that's the most important thing, is if I get in a position where I can see the baseball and I'm in a strong position, you know, that's 3/4 of the battle right there. Now it's just about, you know, just take a good swing and, you know, see what happens. But, you know, I think it was probably going from 16 into 17. You know, that's what he really broke down to me. Because in 16, I had a big leg kick. I almost was falling forward, like really trying to impact the baseball hard. Right. You know, and he kind of really showed me that, hey, take a look at these other great hitters around the league. You know, look at, you know, Barry Bonds. We'd watch Barry Bonds, you know, all day. And he'd just show me, like, how he was so in his back leg. He had the toe tap and everything. But even when he toe taps, it didn't matter. Like, his weight was all locked in on that backside. So then when if they hung something, he's still in a good position to ride out that backside and take a good swing. So I think for me, that was the biggest game changer, just learning how to use my lower half, like really just focusing on one leg. And then for me, I think that allowed me to start hitting the breaking ball, because kind of, you know, through the minor leagues, it was like I'd kill fastballs. But off speed pitches, it was almost like if I wasn't sitting on it, you know, I was just out in front and I drilled in the ground or swing and miss. So when I'm able to really stay on that backside and wait on it and just be ready when he's about to release it, you know, it's game over. Like, now I can wait. Now I can recognize the pitch, see what's coming. Oh, is it a fastball? I'm ready for a fastball. Take your swing. Oh, it's off speed. Like, just ride out that backside, ride it out, and then still take the same swing.
Love that, man. I love it. It is impressive, man. I really, you know, watching you do that, man, and how visual you were with hit and being able to hit anything, when, especially when you got locked in, I was like, uh-oh, somebody's in trouble tonight, you know. I want to go back to an at-bat I just thought was fascinating, man. We were in Toronto, and we were facing Barrios, and he I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but his first at-bat, he comes and For your first at bat, it was like 1-2. I think he threw a pitch outside. It must have been this far outside. And I think Bruce Dreckman was behind the dish and strike three. And I was like, what? You know, I think I almost got tossed because I was there like, you know, they told me to shut up, but I wasn't having it, you know. And you came back and we had a conversation before you went out. And I was just thinking to myself, they're going to go back there again because they're going to try and, you know, they're getting it. If Barrios is getting it, he's going to try and do it again. And I remember saying, it's like, Judgy, why don't you try and take it away? First pitch, he's going to go back out there because he's going to get it. And they're going to try and do it. And I said, take it away if you can. And bro, one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. You hit one of the hardest balls I've ever seen to right field, probably 115 off your bat on a line to right field, you know, into the seats. Can you just talk about your process, man, about like, you know, of just making adjustments and could you go back to that at bat and, you know, and what were you thinking and that great adjustment that you did make?
Yeah, I think, you know, facing Barrios, man, I faced him my whole career, even through the minor leagues, man. That guy's had my number for quite a bit. You know, he's got such a good feel. You know, he's got such good control with his sinker, that great slider curveball that he has. But he also, man, he can run up to 94, 95, you know, 96 when he wants to. So, you know, it's a tough at bat. You never know, yeah. Is he going to stay in with that sinker and try to go away with the slider, or is he going to maybe backdoor that sinker a little bit? He started mixing in that changeup. Like, he's got so many different options. So it's really about just trying to lock in on maybe one or two pitches or one pitch or one zone and go from there. So the first at bat, like you said, he got me looking on, you know, a great pitch on the outside corner. Right. I thought I was a little off, but, you know, it was called a strike. I can't do anything about it. You got to walk back to the dugout. But like you said, that's part of it. Like, if he's a great pitcher on the mound, he knows, hey, if I'm getting 3 or 4 inches off the plate away,
I'm taking it.
I'm going to take it, you know. And I think that at bat, he started me in and then finished me away with the two seamer. So, you know, going to the next at bat, you know, we kind of talked and kind of the same thing. I'm like, hey, he's probably going to maybe flip-flop it, maybe try to steal a strike early away, and then maybe try to finish me in or go back to his curveball. And, you know, sure enough, I was able to get one, you know, out there that kind of ran back just enough. But I think it's just really about, honestly, first at bat, you struck out, learn from it. Like, observe the game, watch the game. Okay. The rest of the game after that bat, I was watching how he was getting guys out, and he was really, he had a good feel for that pitch away. The one in was kind of running off a lot. So going up there and watching 8 other guys hit it, I'm like, hey, he doesn't have a feel for that arm side, you know, two seamer right now. I think he's really locked in on a way. So that really narrows down the answer to, hey, I think he's going to go with that sinker away or maybe a slider away. Like, let's hone in on that location. So, you know, then, like I said, you're able to get a pitch to hit.
Yeah.
Drive it. But it's about, you know, forget about what happened your first at bat, learn from it, you know, now lock in on your approach and what you want to do the second at bat, and, you know, and let it rip. But that's where the baseball side of things, talking with you, watching the game, like, that's the little things that, you know, his numbers might say he throws a two-seamer 60% of the time in. Well, like, if I go based off the numbers and try to go up there again and look for something in, I'd probably take that pitch for strike one or strike two, you know, and then I'm in the hole again. So I think it's just about watching and seeing, hey, he doesn't have the fastball in, let's sit away. Or, hey, maybe today his curveball is really working. He doesn't have fastball command. Like, maybe it's a situation to sit on a slider. So it's just it's just about watching the game.
Would you say most of the time you're working off the fastball?
Yeah, always. Yeah. That's any good hitter, you know, you work off the fastball. It's the hardest one. It's the fastest one coming into you. And, you know, if you're in a good position to hit, you're going to see the breaking ball. You're going to see it pop up out of that window. Because everybody, for me, I have a window. Like, I'm looking for the window of this heater right here. And then when you see that breaking ball pop up out of that, that's when, you know, okay, now I can just hold back a little bit and take a swing on a slider. But, you know, there are certain times, guys I face now in the big leagues, you know, over and over and over, there'll be certain situations where it's like, okay, guys are on base, big situation. I'm probably not going to get a heater. My timing for my body and load is going to be on heater. But I'm going to sit off speed pitch here and see what happens. I'll sit here the first two pitches, first three pitches, whatever we got, and, you know, kind of go from there. But I think 99% of the time, it's, you know, get ready for a heater, look for a heater, and adjust off of that.
Right. Yeah, love that, man. Another big component, dude, and obviously when you're around the guys, you know, I always like to say, of all the guys that get drafted, 95% don't get a cup of coffee. You know, I'm always like, man, like, what is it about the 5%? The 5% play in the big league, 17% of those 5% play 10 years or more. So it's incredible. And then obviously at your level, you know, Cooperstown, that kind of thing, that's another level. But one thing I love about the greats and being around you, brother, like, it really showed me, like, man, I've been around enough great guys, Ken Griffey Jr. and David Ortiz and Gary Sheffield, some of the best hitters to ever play the game. And there's a toughness there that's different. And I saw it with you, brother. Like, and obviously we know, I think one thing, Judgy, what I was so impressed with, and I say this all the time, and I told this to you the other day, when your best player is your best person, it makes it easy on everybody else. But I always say, you know, don't mistake kindness for weakness. You're also one of the most mentally tough dudes I've ever seen, because I look for the guys that, you know, you talked about when you're going good, you never know it. When you're going bad, you never know it. You're kind of that same guy and you're always kind of helping people out. And there's a toughness to you. Can you talk about where that toughness comes from, brother?
Wow. You know, I think it comes from so many different places. I'd say, you know, my parents, you know, how they raised me. And, you know, I think especially my dad being my coach long and, yeah. You know, was talking to me about, you know, he was a basketball coach. He loved basketball, but he'd always just drilled into me that the team comes first. The team comes first. Don't be a selfish player. You know, put the team first. Even if you miss a shot, you know, get back on defense and on basketball. You know, you miss a shot, get back on defense and try to make a play there. You know, I think that kind of translated into baseball the same way of, you know, you got to put your teammates first. You know, if we're going to win this game tonight, which is the most important thing, it's going to take everybody in this lineup, everybody on this field to come together, you know, for one common goal. So if I sit here and I mope or cry about my at-bats or I got screwed by that umpire, you know, I'm taken away from, you know, the one goal, which is to win the game. I'm more worried about myself here, you know. So I think that kind of, you know, going back to my parents, they really just drilled into me that, you know, you got to stay locked in on what's important here and what you can control. And, you know, that's, you know, it's about winning the game, you know. And then even going to college, like I went to college at Fresno State, got to, you know, play under Mike Batesole, and he was the same way. Like, it didn't matter who you were, how old you were, freshman, sophomore, senior, whatever. You know, it's about winning the game. It's about putting the other 40 guys, you know, before you. And we used to get fined in interviews after games, before practice, we get interviewed or something like that. If you ever saw in the newspaper, saw, you know, in the video that you said me, I, you know, my, anything about yourself, $5. $5 in the kangaroo court, another dollar. And he would even take the newspaper, he cut out the clippings and show it to the team. Like, hey, I know we beat Stanford 12-3, guys, but I think Aaron here thought he was the main reason why we won that game.
Oh, wow. So,
you know, he talked to you pretty quick that it's not about you, it's about the team, you know. So I think that plays a big role into it, you know. And then I think, you know, going back to playing in New York, man, there's – you play in front of these fans, you know, you play in the city, you can't make excuses. You can't whine. You can't complain. You know, there's one thing they want to see you do when they pay, you know, the big bucks to come to Yankee Stadium. They want to see you win. You know, they want to hear you saying, oh, that ball was 2 inches outside. Well, I don't care. You should hit it. You know?
We need a hit.
We need a hit. You know, you got to get a hit. So I think just playing in front of those fans who, you know, love us dearly, root for us every single night, man. You got to bring your best. You know, you got to go out there, you got to perform, and, you know, that's what you got to do.
You know, it's funny, you know, playing so many years in the big leagues and being around it. And I played in Boston my last year. The Boston effect's real. Those fans are passionate too. But I tell you what, going to New York, I was even telling Chinch, there's something different about the New York fans. I mean, they are so passionate about the Yankees. That might be putting it lightly, you know what I mean? And everywhere we went, you know, it was sold out everywhere. But, you know, there's something, and I love the roll call too. What about the first time you got the roll call, dude? What was that like, dude, when you got them yelling, Aaron Judge?
Oh, it was that was a special moment. You know what's funny is I get called up. We're playing a day game against the Rays, and I was in AAA. We were playing in Rochester, New York. Just finished a night game. Get told that night after the game, hey, you know, you're going to be playing in the big leagues tomorrow. Like, pack your bags. I had my whole family with me. I had my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, Samantha, and you know, they're telling me, hey, we got a flight for you, but you know, your family's got to find another way or see what they can do. And at that time, you know, they couldn't get on a flight. They couldn't figure things out. We had a car there and I was like, hey, we'll just all get in the car. Let's drive through the night, you know, drop me off at the stadium at 8 a.m. and then you guys go to the hotel and I'll see you at the game. And, you know, for the moment I got to the park, every single guy after saying, hey, congrats, happy you're here, like, make sure you're ready for roll call. All the coaches like, hey, congrats, you know, lucky you're here. We'll do some early work, but make sure you're ready for roll call. Like, us as players, that's what I learned. As players, as a team, like, we absolutely love the roll call. Like, when we hear that, especially in the playoffs, and the stadium's already rocking, but then you can just hear just the bleacher creatures going crazy behind you, just the passion they have. Like, man, it's giving me goosebumps right here thinking about it, you know? So going back to the first one, after all day, everyone's been asking, what do you, you know, you better be ready. You better be ready for it. Don't miss it. You know, I don't even think I was focused on the pitch. I was just waiting to make sure I just didn't miss my name call. You know, so it was a blast. I love it. That's one thing that makes it so special. And, you know, I've never been in a visitor to Yankee Stadium, but I bet it's probably, you know, pretty cool for a visitor to come in and hear that.
There's nothing like it. As a visitor, you're kind of like, you're like, hey, here it comes. You know, here comes the roll call. You know, you think it's cool too. So I think it's so unique with, you know, the Yankee fans with what they're doing. Talk about that, Judge, and go back a little bit for me if you can with like some of your postseason experiences. You know, you guys have been so close, and I really feel like, you know, this could be the year where you get back to that World Series, win a World Championship. But what's it like playing in the postseason as a Yankee?
That's what you dream about. You know, I go back to even my first postseason game I ever played. You know, we're playing a wild card game against the Minnesota Twins, you know, at the stadium. We go down, you know, 3-0 in the first inning. You know, we come back, Didi, you know, Brett Gardner gets on, I get on, Didi hits a 3-run homer right behind me, and then it's a tie game, and the place went bananas. Like, it went bananas. I thought the place was going to fall down, the roof was going to fall down. But it was – That's what you play for. You know, you play to be in those big moments, you know, be in front of those fans. You know, they bring the energy from pitch one all the way to the end. It's special. And then, you know, also you look back on the history, you know, the history of guys that have won in New York, you know, played in those big games in New York. You know, you want to be a part of that. You know, I honestly, I get pissed off when I'm sitting in the stadium and I look around the stadium that has all their banners of not, you know, division champs, you know. Right. You know, American League champs, it's World Series championships all around the stadium. And, you know, I almost get pissed off, but, you know, we're not a part of that group yet, you know. And I think that's why, you know, especially this year, guys are coming into camp so excited, so fired up, in such great shape. You know, they want to be a part of that. You know, I think that's one thing that, you know, Booney always hits on throughout the year is like, you know, you want to be a legend here. You want to win here in New York. You know, when you win here in New York, you know, it's, you know, you go down in history. Anywhere you walk around the city, I talked to Paul O'Neill. You know, I'm good friends with his nephew, Michael O'Neill. And Mikey tells me, he's like, yeah, Paul hasn't bought a meal in New York in 30 years. You know, it's incredible. So, you know, it's just, you want to be a part of that group, man. It's just so special. It means so much. It means so much to the fans who continue to show support, you know, day in and day out. I think that's really, really what drives, you know, not only me, but I think the team is we want to bring it back to the fans. You know, we want to bring it back to the city. We want Yankees to be that mecca of baseball that we know they are.
Yeah. Can you stay there for a second? Because, you know, now when I look at the lineup now, man, it's so much deeper. You know, Verdugo comes in, but Soto comes in. Obviously, DJ is going to have a monster year. Riz is back healthy. It's like things are kind of falling into place. For you, brother, like, where do you see, have you talked to Booney at all about you and Soto? Because I just see, like, you could mix match 2-3. I feel like it could be Soto gets on base so much, so do you. But you guys could kind of, like, you know, do you have a preference? Do you want to hit third? Do you want to hit second? Does it matter? Has Booney talked to you at all about what that, you know, what the top of the lineup's going to shake up with you and Juan?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit, you know, and I think also, you know, adding someone like Verdugo too, who's been a great leadoff hitter for the Red Sox for so long, you know, having him in the mix to where you could have him, you know, you give DJ a day off, you can mix him up there at the leadoff spot, and then you could maybe slide me into the two hole, you know, Soto 3.
Yeah.
But I've been telling Booney since 2021, I want to I want him to hit third.
Third, I know. He told me. He said, Judgey keeps saying he's going to hit third. I was like, keep him at two right now. Keep him at two.
I don't know. Like, I may be old school in that fact, but you know, all the great hitters when I was growing up watching, yeah. You want to be a three hitter. You want to be that guy coming up third, like the big heavy hitter in the back. So, you know, I don't know. Like you said, we have so much depth now. Like there's not an easy part of our lineup now. There's just probably times in the past when guys get hurt, things happen that you're like, okay, I got a little lane here where we can kind of execute some pitches. We don't want to make some mistakes to these guys. But now I look through that whole lineup and it's like, you don't want to make a mistake to any of those guys. So, you know, we'll see. I'd love to hit third, especially with how much Soto gets on. And you know, he's a on base and base hit machine, you know, plus the power. He's going to give you 30 plus homers every year. Yeah. But when he's walking over 100 times and, you know, driving in 100, it's just, you know, that's who you want to hit behind. I don't know. Like, I might be fighting him. But, you know, I want to hit behind him. I want to hit behind him.
That's so good, dude. That's so good. You know, with you guys, you know, with the team, and I always think about, you know, you talk about your rookie year. You're like, oh, man, I was kind of this kind of hitter my rookie year. Had to make some adjustments. And I see that with Volpe. You know, Volpe, you know, I'm thinking it was so great that he got a full season in the big leagues. Obviously, 2020 shortstop, gold glove over there. Man, could he flat out pick it. But I think there's another level of a hitter in there. I don't think Volpe's a 205, 210 hitter. What do you see for Volpe? And what adjustments do you think that he'll be able to make? And do you think that having that first year playing the whole year in the big leagues will help him move forward, Judgey?
Oh, I think that's the biggest thing is just getting experience. You know, the minor leagues and the big leagues, it's such a different game. You know, you're still playing the same game. You're still playing baseball, but it's such a different, the intensity, the players, the quality of the game. It's just, it's a different game. So I think for him to get a chance at, you know, how old is he? 21, 22 years old in the big leagues, playing in the hardest market, in the hardest stadium, you know, and the hardest, like, it's just, he had a lot of things stacked up against him, but he's the type of kid that he wants that. He wants those expectations. He wants that pressure. He wants to fight through that. And, you know, for a guy like that, you know, I'm excited. Like already in the offseason, we started talking and he was like, I already made a couple changes, you know, doing this and that. Like, what do you think about this? I'm working with this. And then to come to Tampa and see the changes he's made. And I think the biggest thing is if he uses the whole field with his speed, you know, that guy, he's going to be unstoppable. You know, it's just, if he hits the ball to right field, he's going to get on base and that single turns into a double real quick. It could be a triple real quick with, you know, him still in third, maybe. You know, I think the biggest thing for him is if he just puts the ball in play, you know, uses the whole field, even if it's on the ground at times, he has a chance to put pressure on a lot of defenses. If he puts the ball on the ground and has to make the defense make a tough play, he's got the speed to beat out a lot of those, you know, ground ball balls in the infield. So, I think the biggest thing for him is just, you know, use the other side of the field, you know, stay consistent over there. But that's what I love about him is he's just, he wants to get better. He's never satisfied. Even like, you know, now in Tampa, we'll be hitting, you know, we'll do a couple competitions at the end. He'll be like, no, one more. He's competitive, man. He's a fighter. He's a dog. And that's who you want at shortstop. You know, that's who you want. You know, when you're in the trenches, you're in a dog fight, game on the line, you know, that's who you want on your team, you know, fighting alongside you, man. So I'm excited for him in this second year. And, you know, because, you know, I look back, if I was his age in the big leagues, I probably would have hit 150. You know, I don't even know what I would be able to do, man. It's incredible to do what he did, you know, last year, 2020 guy, gold glove. You know, then now going to this season, you know, with the type of lineup he has around him to where it's like, hey, just go out there, just do your thing, man. Get on base, put the ball in play, you know, see what happens, man. It's going to be a special year for him.
Yeah, I mean, I love what I love about Volpe is like he loves baseball. I'm like, dude, you can't you don't have to take 5,000 grounders every day. You know what I mean? Like he's like always, you know, always trying to get better, always in the cages, you know, doing his thing. So, you know, and one other thing, Judgey, that you know, with your game too, like By the way, I bought one. Remember, you know, the Swiss wing that we're always on, that like vibrating drum, you know what I mean? I got one downstairs, right? I ordered one because I use it every day. But with you, man, like you were getting ready for the game early too, as far as like foam rolling and like kind of like, you know, on the Swiss wing and stretching out. Has that become more of your part of your routine in the last few years, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'd be fighting you in between innings. I'd go down there cutting on that Swiss thing, and I'd see you getting a little leg on there, getting
the coach. The coach is taking up the equipment. Like, what the hell is Casey doing? I'm like, I try to judge you. Bad hammy, bro. Bad hammy.
Yeah, but you know, that's, you know, going back to my early years. Once I got called up, you know, I talked to Chase Headley, was another guy that, you know, talked to me a lot because I think he dealt with a lot of back injuries through his career. Yeah. Different things like that. And he would always tell me, stretch. Like, you got to do it now. And that's going to buy you 2 or 3 years on the back end. It may seem like you don't need it right now because you can just wake out of bed, you know, do a couple of these, and all of a sudden you can just start launching in BP. But, you know, it takes a toll on your body, and you're not always going to be 25, you know.
Right.
You know, he really kind of tried to harp that into me, you know, early on in my career. And, you know, I really didn't start taking that into account till maybe 2020, when, you know, I had another calf injury, and I'm like, man, I gotta really focus in on this, a lot of this mobility stuff. And I got the strength, the power is there, you know. So I think it's just about, you know, staying flexible, staying loose, staying warmed up. And, you know, if I'm on the field for 162 games, you know, good things are gonna happen. So it's just about, you know, keeping your body primed, ready to go. And, you know, it's a daily routine now, even post game, you know, doing, you know, cold tub, sauna, stuff like that, stretching post game with a lot of guys. You know, we post game, after the game, we have about 10 guys in the sauna.
It's a party.
Exactly. You know, guys in the weight room stretching out, working out. But, you know, that's what you like. That's the type of culture you want to be around, is just guys that want to improve, want to get better. And that's what we have here.
Yeah, I used to love that, dude. I go in like a couple of times, like going to get a sauna, and I'm like, what, the whole team's in here. Volpe's in the cold tub, you're in the sauna, LeMahieu's in there. Like, I thought it was like, man, it's good for these guys for using, especially now in 2024, using the equipment that you guys have for that recovery, like, is incredible. By the way, have you seen the new stuff for the, you know, I think there's new clubhouse coming in, right? And like even new training room or whatever. Have you seen any pictures of it? Is any of it done yet?
Yeah, so we got a chance to check over our spring training facility, GMS. You know, we got a brand new, it's going to be like two phases. We did the first phase working on our new clubhouse, new showers, all that kind of stuff, which looks incredible, you know, top notch. And that was always a thing that, you know, would piss me off a little bit. I'd see all these colleges, Alabama, LSU, they'd be showcasing their new clubhouse, you know, new locker room, new weight room, this and that. I said, man, we're the New York Yankees. How about we get one of those new things, you know? So, you know, but that's, you know, it goes back to our owner, Hal, who, you know, he wants to invest in this team, you know, invest in the future. And, you know, him and the pictures I've seen, the facilities we got, man, it's going to be special. And they're kind of doing the same thing up in New York too. So, I'm looking forward to it, man. It's the future. It's crazy. But I think that's that awesome. Also, it just gives us more access to players, you know, new stuff we can use at the field to help us stay on the field.
Yeah. Awesome, dude. Dude, your kindness to everybody is such a big thing. And I know maybe you get embarrassed when I say that, but I really do. It touched me how you treated everybody, dude, the security guards and the cooks and the clubbies and everybody, right? It was incredible. And I know that you take being a role model as a badge of honor. I know sometimes we hear, hey, athletes aren't role models. I disagree with that, man. I think too much is given, much is expected. You know what I mean? And like, you know, every day you're signing autographs during BP, you always sneak out, sign a couple. And can you talk about that, man? Like, you know, your role as a role model for kids and for men and women, you know, out there, and what that means to you.
Yeah, you know, I try my best with signing the autographs. You know, sometimes I miss a couple of people, which I hear about, you know, they say, hey, oh, you forgot me, you know, and I feel bad about it. But I try my best just because I picture myself when I see that little kid. He's getting a chance to come to the ball game with his dad, come to the ball game with his mom or his family, whoever it is, aunt, uncle. You know, I picture myself when I was going to ball games, you know, with my parents, with my buddies, and I was looking for that one autograph on this dusty old baseball I brought from, you know, my little league practice, you know, hoping to get one autograph. And, you know, when someone would come by and just give me a little scribble when I couldn't even read the name, but you know, right. I still got the baseball, you know, it just meant a lot. Like it just, you know, it just like one of my heroes took the time to come over, sign this for me, spend 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds. So I just try to put myself in their shoes and, you know, spend a little time talking with them. Hey, how's school going? This and that.
Yeah.
Because maybe if that pumps them up, inspires them to be a baseball player, or, you know, gets them excited to, you know, work harder in school, you know, be better in the classroom, be a better, you know, help their parents around the house a little bit more, just do something to kind of inspire them. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, that's what it's all about, just kind of passing your knowledge, passing your love for the game, you know, onto that next generation. So it's, you know, I try my best with all that, man. That's part of the game. You got to be a good role model. You know, you may not ask for it to be in this position, but, you know, in the position we are, you know, in the profession that we're in, you know, you're a role model. You know, people are watching you, the eyes are always on you. And you want to just put out that there's so many bad things going on in the world. You want to try to, you know, put one positive thing out there.
Well, you do it, dude. I went really quick. I want to bring little kid Aaron Judge back for a second. When you cross paths in the big leagues with a guy that you kind of idolized growing up with the Giants, can you tell us that story that we talked about the other day at the All-Star game where you're like, oh man, you're like 10-year-old Aaron Judge came out for a second there.
Yeah. So this was my first All-Star game, 2017. We're in Miami. You know, I'm just, my eyes wide open. You know, I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, how is this even possible? You know, so we're kind of getting pulled over here and doing an interview here, pulled over here. And, you know, throughout the day, I'm like, hey, like, I gotta use the bathroom. I gotta go. And they're like, yeah. The bathroom's over there by the home clubhouse. Just go up the stairs, you know, make a right. I said, perfect. So I start running, getting to the dugout, start going up the stairs to the clubhouse. And as I'm going up the stairs, I got Buster Posey coming down the stairs behind me. And I kind of pass them. We kind of give each other a look. And I almost like freeze. Like he keeps going. I'm like frozen there. Like, no way that was Buster Posey. You know, I grew up in California. I was a big Giants fan. I watched them win some World Series
right.
The other year, it seemed like. And I was like, you gotta say something. You know, what do you say? Like, how do I approach him? Like, does he even know who I am? Like, what do I do with this? So I turn around. I say, hey, Buster, like, you know, it's great to meet you. I'm Aaron. Like, I such a big fan. I'm just giving him the whole spiel. And he's probably like, hey, buddy, I got somewhere to be. But, you know, he was like, hey, Aaron, you know, it's great to meet you. You know, love watching you play. Love what I'm seeing so far this year, man. Best of luck, you know, in your career. And to me, my head just exploded. Like, I was like, the All-Star game could have ended right there. I didn't need any at-bats. I didn't need to do the home run derby. It could have ended right there, and I would have been fine. But it was just so cool crazy. Seeing, you know, a guy that you watched for years. You know, now, you know, a couple hours later, I'm digging in the box in a Major League All-Star game. And I got, you know, one of the guys I've watched for years, Buster Posey, you know, calling balls and strikes behind me. Like, it was just a, like, out-of-body experience. Like, you just don't even – you know what to think, know what to do. You're just almost on autopilot, kind of going through the motions. Like, let me lock in and try to get a hit here. But I'm still freaking out that I got Buster Posey over here, like, trying to get me out. So it's just, it was a pretty special moment, man.
Oh, dude, that is so great. I love that. Those are the best moments, man, because that little kid does come back. You know, you can't believe you're a guy that you loved or a hero of yours growing up. Now you're in the same field as them. It's just, it's incredible.
But you had those same experience, right?
Oh, you kidding me, dude? I had a ton of those experiences. I remember I grew up a Pirate fan growing up, and I remember first time Barry Bonds got the first base, man, dude, you can only imagine me, bro. I was like 24. I'm like, hey, man, I he must have been like, this guy is so annoying. I was like, hey, man, I was a big fan of yours growing up, Killer Bees, you, Bonilla, you know, and Jay Bell, you know, I mean, and so, like, just getting a chance to meet him. And Will Clark, it's funny you say the Giants. Will Clark was my idol growing up, dude, my idol. Matter of fact, I was almost scared to meet him. I'm like, I don't want him to be a bad dude, you know. I just want to, in my mind, think he's the greatest thing ever. And I got a chance to meet Will Clark in 2000 at a spring, we were playing the Baltimore Orioles at spring training last game. And our trainer, Greg Lynn, was the trainer for the Giants back then. He's like, hey, you want to meet the Thrill? And I was like, oh yeah, I want to meet the Thrill. And he came over. It was like one of the coolest, signed a bat for me. But same kind of, it was like the Buster Posey moment, man. That was my moment, was meeting Will Clark. I was like, this is incredible. So great, dude. So great.
Special.
Judgy, we do just two things to finish it up. We do a 9-90 thing really quick. Chinch asks, does a couple comparisons. He'll say one thing, one or the other. I'll answer first, and then you'll answer, right, Chinch? You just want to do really quick.
Yep. And then
I just want to touch on your All Rise Foundation, and then we're out of here, brother.
Sounds good.
Sound good? All right, Chinchy, go ahead. Hit it.
There you go. All right, first question. You have to pick one of these walk-up songs to be your walk-up song for an entire season. Do you go Let It Go from the movie Frozen or I'm Too Sexy from Right Said Fred?
I'm gonna have to say I'm Too Sexy, you know, because they would obviously know I'm kidding, and maybe the crowd would get into it.
Judging?
I'm going Let It Go Frozen. You know, hopefully the kids, they got that memorized. They'll sing along a little bit. They'll kind of like bring the whole crowd into that.
There you go. Oh, the baby
shark. The shark song.
The baby shark. Good call there. All right, good one. All right, this is a weird one. If you hadn't played baseball, would you have been better at being a real estate agent or a used car dealer, Sean?
You know what? I probably at some point that used car dealer would come out at me, and I'd probably own my own used car lot and be the guy that they talk about, like that Casey guy's trying to swindle you, but I would probably make some good money doing it.
I'm going real estate. I feel like I couldn't sell a car, but I could just say, hey, look at this nice house and take it or leave it.
Here's the price.
All right. I know your answer to this, Sean. Have you ever gotten a pedicure? And if so, would you recommend it to other men?
You know what? I was anti-pedicure because I was trying to be like, you know, that, you know, big time man. But I must admit, as I'm getting older, my toes are getting like, my dogs are getting bad. And I'm like, that looks terrible. So Sarah was like, you got to go get a pedicure. Like you're actually cutting me in bed at night. Like actually like Freddy Krueger knives. So I did get a pedicure. And I'll tell you what, I shouldn't have waited so long. It's incredible. They're incredible.
No way. I'm still anti. I don't know what.
It's weird. Yeah,
give it a couple years, Judgy. Give it a couple years. You'll be getting pedicures every week.
It's funny. All the wide receivers in the NFL do it, apparently. It was a thing that, like, Jerry Rice told a bunch of wide receivers back in the day. Like, if your feet aren't good, you can't cut. And he said, always take care of your feet. And so, like, T.O. and Ocho Cinco and those guys, I think they did a show from a pedicure place. Just throwing it out there. We want to keep you healthy, Judgy. So no,
yeah, you're right.
Right. Judgy, Volpe, we'll have Riz getting pedicures. Get me the video.
All right. This is tough. In case you got to do this for half a season, describe what it means to put on a Yankee uniform in 10 words or less.
Oh, 10 words or less. Incredible, impactful, exhilarating. Just, it's everything, man. It's an incredible experience to put on those pinstripes. Nothing like it.
Yeah, the greatest achievement in your life. That's all you can put it. Like getting a chance to wear those pinstripes and, you know, all the legends that came before you. That gives me goosebumps again.
Me too, bro. Gave me the chills. Like,
thinking about that, people that played at Yankee Stadium, the things they did for this game and continue to do for this game, man. It's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
I didn't play for the Yankees, but Casey got me one of your warm-up shirts while he was there the other day. And I was with my brother the other day, and he's like, dude, where'd you get that? And I'm like, this is from the Yankees, bro. No tells. I'm like, I got this from the clubhouse. Freaked me out. Anyway, all right, a couple more. All right, this is a good one. Would you consider yourself a Swiftie, Sean?
Yes, I'm a Swiftie. I've been to like 4 concerts, I think.
Oh, see, I haven't been to a concert, so I don't think I can consider myself a Swiftie. She's got great music. You know, Travis is my guy, but I don't think I'm a Swiftie yet. Until we go to a concert, I don't think I can consider myself a Swiftie.
I think you can get tickets.
What about Sam? Is she one? Is she a Swiftie?
No, she hasn't seen her either, so I don't think so. We're late on the train, but
we'll oh, you'll get on it. You just got to go once, Judge. You'll get on it.
Right. All right, last question. I'm excited about this one. Who wins in a tag team steel cage match? On one side, we have Sean Casey and Anthony Rizzo. On the other side, we have Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton.
Oh my, seriously, dude.
He knows the answer to this.
I tell you what, when you're next to Judgy and G in the same, right? Like, I'm a big dude. I'm like 6'4", you know, I'm about 230. when you get next to Judgy and G, I feel like you, Chich, like 5'9", like, man, these are some big boys. So like me and Riz would get waxed by those guys. I just have to say it. And Judgy's huge. G's huge too. Like just jacked.
That'll be a first round knockout.
Love it.
Oh my God, Judgy, you're the best, brother. Before we go though, real quick, man, I just want you to, you know, for all of us out there, can you talk about your All Rise Foundation, man? What you're doing for the kids? You know, it's such incredible. The camps you do, the leadership programs, inspiring kids to be their best, taking care of each other. I was on a call with you the other day. I was so impressed. First off, your mom's like, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. What an incredible human being. And your dad, too, two of the greatest people in the world. Can you just touch about that a little bit, the All Fries Foundation? How can our listeners, you know, get involved or learn more about it?
Yeah, you know, it's a foundation that, you know, our family started, you know, back in 2018. You know, it's really just about empowering the youth, this next generation, to be better citizens. You know, we got different after-school programs. We got camps we send them to. We do baseball clinics, you know, just kind of everything, just trying to teach them life lessons, just teach them any type of lesson. And, you know, if you want to support, you know, I think going to the Aaron Judge AllRiseFoundation.org, you know, just check out our website, you know, see what we got going on. You know, we got a lot of great stuff going on. You know, we're working on, you know, maybe doing a scholarship here coming up soon. And you know, we got different mini grads. We just try to go out and support other, you know, foundations and, you know, programs that we think are, you know, supporting our mission. So we're excited about what's going on and excited for the future, man. If we can just impact one kid's life, man, we're doing our job.
Judgy, well, you're doing it, man. You're impacting millions of people's lives out there. And dude, thanks a ton for coming on with us today with Chinch and I. And brother, get that world championship this year. Tell Booney and the boys and Volpe and everybody, Riz and those guys, I said hello. I'll be watching from afar. Hopefully see you at some point. And good luck as the season gets going, brother. Thanks again, man.
All right, I appreciate it, Case. Chinch, I appreciate everything, man. This was great. And when I get that pedicure, then we'll hop back on here for another show.
Done deal, brother. Thank you.
Done deal. All
right, take care, guys.
All right, Judgy. Thanks, Judgy. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Anytime.